We're talking about the power of play in this hour. And here's a sound that's probably familiar to you. I'm not much of a gamer myself, but I do have teenagers, and they have a PS4 and an Xbox on which they have logged some serious hours. According to one estimate, the average young person spends a total of 8 hours a week playing video games. That's the equivalent of more than 2 weeks a year. All that mindless screen time, that cannot be good for growing brains. But as it turns out, new research is finding social and psychological benefits to gaming. And now, a new generation of educators wants to bring video games into the classroom. Journalist Greg Tapo covers this new development in his book, The Game Believes in You: How Digital Play Can Make Our Kids Smarter. He talked with Raymond Tunkekar.
I think games can be used to encourage kids to do pretty much anything. A good game, whether it's an academic game or, you know, any kind of game, it really is all about presenting material in a very clear and unfettered way. You know, one of the folks that I talked to in the book, he has what I think is probably the best analogy. He says, you know, let's say you're trying to teach math, for instance. You know, a good video game is, in a sense, kind of like a piano for math. It allows you to sort of play math, and play in, you know, sort of both senses of the word, play as in a musical instrument and also play as in play around with it.
Hmm. And as you point out, there's a long history of education advocates wanting to use games as a classroom aid.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we think that it's a very recent phenomenon, and I guess it's recent in this particular iteration. That is, I would say it's only been in the past maybe 10 or 12 years that people have been really thinking about it in a big way. But, you know, the effort has been kind of chugging along at a very low level for, I would say, at least 40 years. You know, one of the things that I think about is sort of the big educational game was something like the Oregon Trail. And, you know, what people may not know is that the first eighth graders to play that game were doing it in 1971. So that, you know, they're now in their mid-50s. So it's been a while since people have been thinking about this kind of thing.
Well, and I grew up playing that game too, and for the life of me, I couldn't figure out what it was trying to teach me, other than that squirrels are harder to shoot than bison.
Okay. I guess that's not an idea you had when you started, right? But in terms of, you know, what it taught you, I mean, I think it taught one important thing that really came almost by accident, and that is something called systems thinking. Systems thinking is essentially training the mind to think about the world in terms of systems, in terms of how things are built. So what would happen when you started the Oregon Trail, if you remember, the first thing it asked you was, how would you like to eat? And it gave you three choices, right? Mm-hmm. Well, moderately, and poorly. And, you know, you could just sort of mindlessly click one or the other. But what it immediately asked you to do is think, what are the implications of that? And how will this game play out differently if I choose one over the other? And maybe if I choose one this time, I'll choose another the next time and see, you know, how things work out. So it was really introducing you. I mean, think about how young you might have been playing that game. It was really introducing you to systems in a kind of an effortless way.
And reading the book, I mean, that was a surprising revelation for me. It kind of led me to view video games less as a pleasurable activity and more as a vehicle for actually transmitting information, specifically like making models of different worlds, which video games seem to really excel at.
I think that's right. And actually, you know, the central idea, if you will, of this book is that games introduce something called hard fun. And that's an actual sort of video game term. And what it means is that, yes, you're having fun. Yes, you're enjoying yourself, but you're also doing something really difficult. And a good game will sort of build until you're doing something that you maybe even didn't think you could do. You know, we like to think of video gamers as sort of slackers, right? I mean, my understanding was really that they were slackers going into this. I mean, I didn't really know much about this world, even though I was sort of a casual gamer. What I came away with at the end was that gamers aren't sort of eternal slackers. I think they're eternal strivers in a way. And that was really a revelation for me.
Well, you know, I have no children myself, but I do have friends whose children spend hours a day playing video games. And, you know, it's getting to the point where it's starting to kind of affect their grades. I mean, shouldn't we be concerned that bringing games into the classroom only reinforces this type of bad behavior?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I'd push back a little bit on the idea that it's bad behavior, mostly because when you're playing a game, I mean, you're not just sort of kicking back and just vegging out. I mean, you're really working hard at something. So the kind of work that you're doing when you're playing a game, I mean, it's really active. It's really, you know, you're challenging sort of your mental faculties. So in a sense, we just really need to sort of rethink what we're asking kids to do. I mean, in a sense, that's what a video game does in the end. It allows the player, whether they're a kid or an adult, to do something sort of epic. And if that's the only opportunity that someone has in their day to do something epic, I wouldn't blame the game. I would blame the rest of, you know, the other 22 hours of their life.
And I suppose also, in a way, it teaches them how to fail.
Absolutely. And that's a skill we've lost in a big way. The ability to fail well and come back and give it another shot. You know, there's a whole book in that in terms of, you know, the healthy attitude that games give people in terms of failure.
In the book, you talk about how games have built-in ways of actually testing student comprehension. Do you think video games could replace standardized tests and other ways of testing students?
I actually do. I mean, I don't think we're there yet, but when you think about what a good game does, I mean, I don't know if you're a gamer, but you know, one of the things that gamers really love is that games set out a task, ask you to do the task, and evaluate you, right? It really is one big test, and the final product is you either did well or did poorly, and we're going to tell you exactly, step by step, minute by minute, how well you did. That's what testing is about, right? The problem is they don't always do it very well. So, you know, as one researcher says in my book, you know, if I make it through all the levels of Halo, you don't need to give me a test at the end to ask me how well I know Halo. The test is done. I just did it. And I think that's got some really, really huge potential for school, because in a way it could sort of make testing as we know it obsolete. I would give it maybe 4 or 5 years. I think we're going to see a very, very different kind of assessment for kids in school.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like what you're doing with this book is you're kind of pushing back against this idea that there isn't any value to gaming beyond pleasure. And, you know, I was really surprised to find out that there were all sorts of benefits games have. You actually write about gaming as a sort of therapy for children with attention deficit disorders.
And that was actually a surprise to me. I mean, that was not something I knew about going into this. It was actually something I just found out about doing my reporting. And, you know, it really, I actually have played some of these games.
Oh, really? What are they like?
Well, I think, you know, most of them are still sort of in the early stages, but they're on their way, and I think they're getting pretty good. I actually just played a new version of one over the weekend. And what it does is it asks you to put on this headband, this EEG headband. And essentially what it does is it reads your brain waves minute to minute. So you're playing the game on a laptop, but your hands are not on the keys or not on the mouse pad or trackpad. You're controlling the game with your brain. And in this case, what you're doing is you're controlling how fast the character in this game runs. And you can do that essentially by focusing on the character themselves. And I will say, you know, like I said, I don't have ADD, but when I took that headband off after about 20 minutes, I mean, I had this sort of interesting sort of clarity of mind. It really felt like a yoga workout or something that I had just come out of.
It's kind of remarkable to think that your doctor in the future could regularly prescribe 15 minutes of gameplay a day or something.
That's right. That's actually what the goal is. They're sort of this quiet foot race to create a prescription strength video game. And I mean that quite literally, that your doctor could pull out their prescription pad and say, you know, instead of one pill of Adderall, you need to play this game for 20 minutes or half an hour a day. So it's sort of a brave new world out there.
I'm just thinking about how central play is to the way we learn, right? I mean, children clearly mimic adults and learn certain skills through play. You talk about this long history of education advocates trying to bring games into the classroom. Why is the idea of fun so foreign a concept in schools today?
You know, I think we just have this sort of American Puritan idea that fun and achievement are sort of on two ends of the spectrum. And I want to be careful to say that I don't think good teachers think that. I think if you remember the best teachers you had, they understood that, you know, learning something really hard can be fun. But I think the system in general has lost this idea. And, you know, the thing that I say in the book is that, you know, we really just need to sort of shake this idea and just kind of take the advice of some really good teachers, really good game designers, and try to think about where the fun is in really, really hard things. And I think we, you know, we'll get better results in the end.
Greg Toppo covers education for USA Today. His book is The Game Believes in You. Raymond Tangekar talked with him.